Well, you get the monsoon in India, as I expect some of you know. It comes down like a wall. Well, you all rush for the nearest sort of house eaves and you huddle under it like that. But actually, you get soaked. Well, I saw a man, this wall of water came down the street and we all rushed for this. And he simply walked down the center of the street as though he was having a shower bath, perfectly at ease. Well, that picture of that man, it completely independent of it. We were all going to get wet. He was independent of it, as though he were enjoying it. That picture has been a help to me in times of difficulty and mountains of spite or venom or jealousy or false stories or maybe genuine accusations are made against you, to be able to simply walk through it. And one Japanese poem is this, the cicada. It's called the cicada. The cicada or cicada is a tiny little insect about the size of a thumb. But it can rub its wings together and it can make a terrific sound. And when first time you hear it, you think, my God, there's nothing there. And it goes on and oh, it's a tiny little thing, and this huge voice comes from out of that. In some of the poems it says, the voices of envy and spite and calumny. They're cicadas. It's a tremendous noise. But really, those people, they're nothing. They're nothing but noise. And there's a poem, a famous poem. The cicada is finally, it dies and then it's eaten, and then you just have the shell. It's like a sort of little beetle, with a hard casing. It's just the empty shell. And the poet sees the empty shell and he says, oh, did it become entirely voice, the cicada shell? And those people who make all these furious attacks, they become empty shells. Well, a little poem like this sometimes can be quite helpful in difficulties. So I've passed it on to you. Look at what Freud really said, which is that society cannot go on without repression of the personal and sexual freedoms and sublimation. That's what Freud actually said. What it tends to be thought that he said was that there shouldn't be any repression at all. But that's not, in fact, what he said. And I suggest reading Civilization and Its Discontents. Now, you may be talking about much more recent psychologists. And in which case, I would only say this, try it. And I have done very severe athletic training. The body says, oh, no, not again. And the will says, yes, again. Not unreasonably. But it says again. Now the body doesn't like this. But if you carry through, the body begins to change. And then there's a new vitality and vigor in the body when this mastery is attained. Now this is not meaningless repression of the fatigue and the impulses to do something else or to distraction. It's not meaningless, it has a purpose. And the same way Freud, so he said the whole of culture is based on repression and sublimation. But we should try ourselves and observe the effect on ourselves. If I repress my anger, and I'm boiling with it inside, not much is gained. except by other people. I mean, it means I'm not... but I can change that anger within myself by repressing and then sublimating it. I began, I shouldn't say this, perhaps as a personal... I began seriously studying Sanskrit at 55. And it's much too old to start a new language. But the cultivated antagonistic approach from judo made me feel this language is like a judo opponent. I had to change my technique, but I wrote the texts I wanted to master out in huge letters and hung them around the wall of the room. And then while I was swinging weights sometimes, I would try to get the meaning. When I'd lost the meaning, I'd go up close and read, oh yes, and come back again, and then try again. Well, I changed the technique. This was like a fight. But it wasn't a meaningless fight. The fighting instinct had been repressed and then sublimated into this abstract opponent, the Sanskrit language. And in fact, I have published a couple of books of Sanskrit translation. I give this personal example because it's real to me. But basically, these things depend on experiment. And the thing is to try these things and see what the effect is on oneself. See whether repressing and sublimating does create a block. See whether it does. My teacher used to say there are undreamt of possibilities in the mind. And that by disciplined activity, but meaningful disciplined activity, they can be brought forth. And we can see, for instance, in memory. People these days can't remember much. We don't train the memory. But something like Thackeray, 200 years ago, in a storm at sea, to distract his mind from the danger, he recited the whole of Paradise Lost by heart in his cabin. In the Indian continent of 300 BC, we know from the Greek ambassador, people could remember books, the heart. I can think of, well, you can't do that, it's impossible. No, it's possible. Now we should find out what we want to do. And then, by disciplining the life and sublimating it to do something worthwhile, see whether these powers do develop in ourselves. And if they don't, stop it. And if they do, it'll be make life much more interesting. You can all read silently. You can pick up something. But in Roman times, they couldn't do that. They had to verbalize the words. They had to read the words aloud. They couldn't read silently. You were a genius, like St. Augustine or the astronomer Ptolemy, if you could read silently. But now everybody can do it. So we're all geniuses. No, we're not. We've developed this.